And we're holding on Memhei Omid Bey's five lines from the six lines, rather, from the bottom. We talked about in the Mishnah, we had the two different opinions, Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, about what kind of Shmira is necessary for a Tam versus a Muad. We said Reb Meir had said that you need Shmira Ma'ula. It's not enough to do Shmira Posa, for example, just putting up a regular door. If you put up a regular door and then it falls down or whatever, and the animal goes out, you're going to be Chayev. Reb Yehuda had said that if the animal's a tam, then you are chayev unless you do shmirah me'ula. But for a muad, you're chayev only for a muad, or you need a shmirah posa, and he learned it from a pasuk. We have the opinion of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, who said that either way, shmirah posa is enough, and he also learns it from psukim. The last thing we mentioned in that connection is Reb Ada ba Ava had said, even according to Reb Yehuda, that was saying that Shmirah Chosah is enough for a muad. What Rabbi Yehuda means by that is that he says, Tzad Tamus Bim Koima Emedis, the animal still has the status of a tam. It just additionally, on top of that, has the status of a muad. Therefore, when we say, so if he were to do Shmirah Chosah, which even Rabbi Yehuda agrees is not enough for a tam, then the result would be he would still be Chayiv and Chatzi Nezek, because we would still consider that the part, the fact that the aspect that it went and caused damage as a tam still is still exists, and therefore he'd be chayev for that. So now the Gemara continues. Omar Rav. So now Rav says here's a case of here's a case where you have an animal as part tam and part muad. Muad lekeren yamin, ene muad lekeren smol. If the animal is muad to gore with its right horn, it's already done that three times, then it's not necessarily muad for the left horn. Now Tosfos says that maybe that means davka right. Maybe the Gemara is mentioning davka muad for the right is not muad for the left because the right is usually stronger, implying, in other words, that if it was the other way around, then we wouldn't necessarily say that. If it had regularly gored with the left horn, maybe in fact Rav would say it is considered muad for the right horn as well, because we would say if it's muad, if it's damaged even with the left one, which is weaker, which is its weaker side, we have with the Pashtus, I guess the assumption is that animals like people are usually right-handed, then how much more so then how much more so the right. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who disagree with that and say that actually either way, the Gemara is just giving one example, but it would be the other way as well. Anyway, so Rav is saying that you can have an animal that's muad only as far as one horn. So Amri, so they asked in the Yeshiva, I'll leave it to man. According to which Tana is Rav saying his statement? Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, obviously, Rav is not telling us this as far as Tashlumin, as far as what you have to pay. If we had back, if we had several blot ago that, for example, you can have an animal that's muad only to gore animals, but not to gore people, or only muad to gore on Shabbos, but not on weekdays, etc., then sure, there's no question that you can have an animal that is muad for one horn, but not for another. There'd be no chiddush in that. Rav obviously must be telling us not so much as far as what chiyuv of payment he has, but rather in terms of what level of shmirah does he have to do on this animal in order to be potter. So now, which of the tannaim that we're talking about so far is he going according to? If he's following Reb Meir, it wouldn't matter. Reb Meir says that either way you need shmirah me'ula. So according to Reb Meir, it would make no difference in terms of the shmirah. Again, not in terms of the payment, but but we're saying that Rav's statement is not really addressing the matter of payment. As far as Shmirah, Reb Meir would say, there's no difference whether we consider given that the right horn is muad, there's no difference whether we consider the left horn to also be muad or tam. Either way, unless you do Shmirah Ma'ula, according to Reb Meir, you're going to be chayiv if the animal goes out and causes damage. And if it's according to Reb Yehuda, then why bother mentioning the left horn? After all, Rabbi Ada Ba'ava just told us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a muad is a tam plus, meaning, in other words, that even as a muad, it still retains the characteristics and the dinim of a tam. Well, then, in that case, it wouldn't. Then, in that case, with either horn, if the animal, if he does shmirah posa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the animal goes and causes damage with its right horn, we would say he did shmir pchusa. That's enough to pater him from the tzad mu'odus. Now he's only chayev as though it were a tam, so he's paying chatzi nezek. And if it gores with the left horn also, and then you have exactly the same thing. He's only chayev for tzad tamus. So which tana, which of these two tanoim is Rav following in implying with his statement that you have a different level of shmira necessary to be potter for one versus the other? So Amri, they answered, lo'olam k'Rav Yehuda. In fact, Rav does agree with Rav Yehuda. V'loy stvira le'ed Rav Adaba Ava. What it is Rav does not agree with Rav Adaba Ava's concept about Sad Tamus. He would say, no, a muad is, once the animal becomes a muad, then you set aside all the dinim that applied to it as a tam until now, and now you substitute them only with the new dinim of a muad. So in other words, it would come out that with a muad, if you did shmira posa, not like Rav Adaba Ava says, you'd still be chayev for chatzin nezek as though the animal was still a tam. Rather, Rav holds that Rav Yehuda would say that no, you'd be potter completely in that case, because after all, as we learned yesterday, Rav Yehuda learns from Sukkim that by a muad, the Torah says only that you need to do shmira posa, and once you do, you're potter. So Rav Adaba Ava had been machadish that you're still chayev for the part of Tammuz. Rav does not agree with that. And in fact, not only he doesn't agree, but Hochi Karmar, Rav, by mentioning this case about the right horn and the left horn, what he's saying, in effect, ki hai gavno hu demashkachas be tzad Tammuz mu odus. The only way you want to find an example, says Rav, where an animal can be half tam and half muad, don't think like Rav Adaba Ava says that any muad is also considered half tam. No, the only example with that would be where one horn is where one horn is tam and one horn is muad. And then you would say that if he did shmira posa, then if it later on went out and caused damage with the right horn, he'd be potter because he did shmira posa, and if it damaged with the left horn, he'd be chayev because relative to the left horn, it's still a tam, and for that he needs shmira mola. Aval, but Rav in effect is saying, muad legamri lemashkachas beit sad tamus klal. When the animal is completely muad, there's no such thing as there being an aspect of tamus with it, like Rav Adaba Abba says. So in other words, Rav is not only telling us a din, he's also telling us the fact that I'm saying that you have this example and only this example of an animal that's both tam and muad is not like Rav Adaba Abba, who would say that any muad is also considered a tam as well. So he's coming to specifically negate what Rav Adaba Abba had said.
What about if the bull uses both horns, which is most likely in most cases? What does Adaba Abba have to say about that?
Then Rapashtus, so Rav Adaba Abba would say then that Rav Adaba Abba would. Rav Adaba Abba doesn't make the distinction between the right horn and the left horn. So he would say that, but he would say, okay, one horn is muad, one horn is tam. So he would say, okay, so as far as both of them, Rav Adaba Abba would say, if he did shmira pchusa, he ends up paying only chatzi nezek for the damage altogether, because the one horn is a muad, and for that he only needs shmira pchusa according to the Yehuda. We would say that the one is a muad, but he did shmira posa, so for that he's potter, but he's still chayev for tzad tamus for that horn, and the other horn to begin with is a tam. So Rav Adaba Abba would say he's paying only chatzi nezek for that damage with either horn or both horns. According to Rav, if he had damaged with both horns, perhaps we would have to say, since Rav would say one horn, Rav Yehuda would pater him completely for the right horn because he did shmira posa, and mimchayev him chatzi nezek for the left horn because shmira posa for that one is not enough. But Pashtus Rav, I guess, would have to say that he's only going to be chayev in that case if it gored with both horns. Then I guess I don't know. We could look at it either way. We could say he's chayev chatzi nezek because the left horn was involved in causing the damage, or maybe we might have to say we'd have to evaluate how much, what percentage of the damage was done by one horn versus the other, and prorate the chatzin nezek accordingly.
That's almost impossible.
Not really. Not really. I mean, you know, you could see, for example, you could see, let's say, you can see the more you can see the actual scars of the actual injuries from the horns themselves in the other animal or something, and you could evaluate based on that. Keep in mind, of course, with all of this, you need to have ADIM anyway. No ADIM, no case. So maybe the ADIM could actually notice whether it gored with one horn or both horns. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Also, how do you translate those cases of damages by bullhorns into damages that are done by something else than bullhorns, like cars
no,
or
we learned back in
planes?
We learned back in the first perek that there any kind of damage that the animal does that's unusual is considered a tolda of keren. So we said, for example, kicking, biting, deliberately lying down on things. So yeah, you'd have the same kind of thing. If an animal is moored to bite, then after three times it becomes moored for biting. I mean, there you can't really talk about the right side of the mouth versus the left, but you could of course. I mean, Rab is not negating the point that you can have, for example, an animal that's moored to gore with its horns, but not moored to bite. Obviously, you could have that. We're talking about within the horns themselves, you can distinguish between right and left. I mean, if we're talking about, for example, kicking, yeah, you could also distinguish between an animal that's moored to kick with its right foot versus with its left foot. Yeah. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Eliezer, Eimos Shmira El Sakin Chola. We said Rabbi Eliezer had said that he took the hardest line on it, that Shmira Pchosa, Shmira Ma'ula. When it comes to a Muad, none of that helps. None of that patters you. The only valid Shmira for Shur Muad is to Shecht it. And if you don't, then you chayev for anything that it does. So, Omar Rabba, my time at Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer say that? Because the Pasuk says he will not guard it. Now, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, of course, that it means that that he has a shur muad and he hasn't watched it, so therefore now it goes out and causes injury or damage or whatever, and therefore he's chayev. But the expression velo yishmerenu in future tense, after all, it could have said velo shmorai or something like that, would implies, says Rabbah, that Rabbi Eliezer holds shuv ein lo shmir lazeh, there's no further possible watching for this animal. In other words, in effect, the Torah is saying, v'lo yishmeranu, it will be impossible for you to be shomer this animal from now on. From now on, anything that happens with this animal, you're going to be liable unless you actually go shecht it, because there's not going to be any valid method of shmira that would pater you. So that's where Rabbi Eliezer gets it from, says Rabbah. But Omale Abaya, Elameata, but Abaya says, if you're going to learn like that, Dichtiv, what about you have by another one of the Ovis Nizikin? You have the expression in the Pasuk, by a burr, the lo yichasen. You have the expression where a person digs or uncovers a burr, Bershosarabim, which is going to be the major, which is going to be the main subject of the next parak. And he does the lo yichasenu, and he will not cover it. And then a shur or chamur falls in there, then he's chayev. So nami, so you're going to say also shuva in the kisu lazeh. Are you going to say the pasuk is implying that once the burr is uncovered, it's impossible to cover it in a way where you're going to be potter for any potential damages from it? V'chitema hochi nami, and you might answer, maybe, yeah, maybe once you dug a burr, the Torah is implying there's no possible way to cover it that would be valid. No, v'hotinan, we learn in the next parak. If you do dig a burr in Bishus Rabin, but then you cover it properly, the Nafal Asam, meaning with a strong enough cover that will withstand all of the foot and wagon and whatever traffic that goes in this particular area. We're going to learn the details of that in the next parak. The Nafal Asaycha Shura Chamur Mess, and yet a Shura Chamur fell into it, whether because it could be because somebody else removed the cover, it could be because the cover rotted away in a way that you couldn't have expected, whatever the case, anyway, vomess, and the animal dies, potter. Then you're potter, because you covered the burr properly. So we see, just because it says v'lo yichasenu, doesn't mean that you can never validly cover the burr again. So why should Rabbi Eliezer be saying that v'lo yishmerenu means it's impossible to ever do shmira for this animal? Ela, Omar Abaya, rather, Abaya says, hainu taima de Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer's reason is based on the following. Kedetanya, Rab Nosson Omer, Minayin Shaloy Gadol Odom Kelev Rabba Soch Beise. How do we know that a person is not allowed to raise a bad dog, a mean dog, in his house, which then it may bite people, it may bark and scare people. We're going to learn about this in more detail later in the Masechta. Ba'al Yamed Sulam Ru'ua B'Soch Beise. And he shouldn't allow there to remain a rickety ladder in his house where somebody could climb up the ladder and fall off and injure or kill himself. Shenema, because the pasuk says, "V'lo sasim damim b'vesecha." Don't put it in the context as the pasuk is talking about the mitzvah to make a mica, to make a fence or a guardrail around your roof. "V'lo sasim damim b'vesecha." Don't let there be bloodshed in your house. So Rav Nosson says, from this we learn not only a roof where a person might go up on there and get injured or can fall down and get injured or killed, but any other kind of hazard in the house you're responsible to make sure is not there. So by the same token, then Rashi says, what Abaya says is Rabbi Eliezer is saying we are after all using the pasuk v'lo yishmeranu like Rabbi did. So now that we have the statement of Rabbi Nosson about that you're not allowed to have such dangerous things around your house, then that would also. So now we can go back to understand that the word v'lo yishmerenu in the pasuk does in fact mean, like Rabbi had said, that it means that you can't watch it. So in other words, the difference is, so in other words, in effect, Abaya is saying we do need both psukim. Just from the pasuk v'lo yishmeranu by itself, it wouldn't have been enough, because we see by v'lo yichasenu, we don't darshan it that way. But once we have Rav Nosson's din, then that makes it possible for us to say that v'lo yishmeranu in fact means you're not allowed to have it around in the first place, and you're not, and you can't say that any guarding that you do for it is valid. Now Tosfos also says, in that case, why don't we say the same thing about a burr? And the answer is because a burr, once you cover it, then that's it. You really have completely removed the hazard. As opposed to with a shur, no matter how much shmira you do for it, it's already a shur mord. It's already mord to go and gore and injure. So just having it around your house itself is a hazard, and therefore, based on Rav Nosson's din, then you can't have it around. Also, Tosfos says what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, we're not even talking about as far as what tashlum and yuchayev. We're talking about that there's an iser to keep a dangerous thing around your house. But nevertheless, it is true, Rabbi Eliezer would agree, that if you did shmira ma'ula and then it caused damage, you might indeed be potter. So therefore, by a bird, the Shemitah Me'ula is to cover it, and that's that. It's not going to get uncovered again unless somebody else goes and removes the cover or something else very unusual happens. But here we're saying that with a shur, it's not like that. So in other words, Tosfos says in their second answer that Rabbi Eliezer might say, it's true, if you do Shemitah Me'ula, then you are going to be potter even with the ox. Nevertheless, though, you have no business doing that. You have no business doing Shemira Me'ula. Just go shech the animal rather than taking the risk of that with Shemira Me'ula, the animal is going to be safe, because based on what Rav Nosson is saying, you're doing an issur by keeping that animal around in the first place. So in any case, based on that, based on the combination of those two psukim, is what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, that Eimos Shmira Elasakin, that just Shmira, whether Shmira Pchosa or Shmira Me'ula, is not enough. You need to go beyond that in order not to be over on Rav Nosson's din. Hadron Alachshor Shenogach Habal Chamisha. This next perek, we're going to start with more dinim about a shur goring. We're going to finish off that topic. Then most of the rest of the perek is going to talk about dinim of bur. So far we've gone in detail through the first perek was kind of more in the nature of an introduction to the whole masechta, listing the obvious nizikin, listing the certain basic rules about nizikin and so forth. The second parak had started dealing with Shane Varegel, and then talking about the details of them. The third perek, we started talking about cases of bur, and then we started moving in cases where a person leaves, for example, where a person leaves a jug in Rosh Hashanah and somebody else trips over that and all that. Then we started getting into dinim of shur, and that consumed the rest of that perek and all of the fourth perek. So now we'll start the fifth perek with it, and then we're going back to bur. So the Mishnah starts off shur shenoga chasapara. If a shur gored a parah, so a shur is a male, a parah is a female. The nimtza ubra betzida, and then you find, so afterwards you find that there's a fetus, a stillborn baby of the parah next to it. The in yadua imad shel nog chayolda im mishen nog chayolda. So now you don't know, did the parah give birth before the goring or after the goring? If it gave birth before the goring, then the owner of the shur has nothing to do with it. It miscarried before the shur ever came on the scene. Even if you have, though, a mafoshim point out, you could conceivably have that it miscarried out of fright when it saw the shur. Nevertheless, that would only be grumma. That would only be an indirect kind of damage, and therefore the owner of the shur would be potter for that. Or you could have that the shur had gored. We know for sure that the shur gored the parah. We have edim to that, but we're not sure. Or either we have edim, or maybe we have, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, you could conceivably have that the owner of the shur himself goes and admits it in Beis Din. As far as knas, then we're not mechayev him at knas, but as far as momon, we're going to be mechayev him. So anyway. But we're not sure. It could be that it gored the parah while the parah was still pregnant, and then it miscarried. Well, then the result is that the owner of the shur is going to be chayev not only for the injury to the parah itself, but also he's going to be chayev as far as the baby. So which is it? When I was in yeshiva, by the way, they used to tell a cute story as a lesson to learn to not always jump to ask questions until you understand a little more thoroughly. And no, this is not meant necessarily as a hint to anybody who's listening over here. They tell a story of a guy who's starting to learn this perek. He learns shur shenoga chasapara, and he starts wondering, why shenoga chasapara? Why not shur shenoga chasashur? And he starts looking in Rashi, Tosfos, Marsha, Maram, this, that, the other, and nothing. You can't find anything. He's like, wow, such a strong question, and nobody ever came across it before. Then he reads, and then he learns the next words. V'nimtza ubra betzida, you find its baby next to it. Oh, now I understand why it had to say para. Anyway. So the Mishnah says, "Im mishenog chayolda." So v'en yadua im actually nog chayolda im mishenog chayolda. So we don't know, did it give birth before it was gored, and then the fact that the baby is dead has nothing to do with the shur, or at least not directly enough for the owner of the shur to be chayev for im mishenog chayolda, or if it gave birth, if it miscarried after the goring, in which case the owner of the shur is going to be chayev for the death of the baby as well. He's going to be chayav of that value as well. So then, meshalem chatzin nezek lapara or revia nezek levlad. So he has to pay chatzin nezek for the cow. That part is pretty obvious because we're talking about over here where the animal that gored was a tam. So therefore, maximum it's paying is chatzin nezek anyway. The chiddush is that he's paying revia nezek levlad. He's paying one quarter of the nezek of the baby. Because we say, in other words, even if we knew that the shur had killed the baby, then he'd be chayev chatzin nezek, because we're talking about a tam. Because of the suffix over here, we divide that chatzin nezek in half, and therefore he's paying a quarter nezek. We're going to see in the Gemara more detail about that. And obviously, if the animal that caused the injury is a mord, then we're going to be talking about full nezek versus chatzin nezek. V'chein, similarly, continues the Mishnah, parash nogcha es asher. What about the other way around? If the cow, the female, gored the shur, the male, the nimtza vlada betzida, afterwards you go and you find that the cow's baby is standing next to it. Here the baby was born live. The question is, v'en yadua im actually nogcha yolda im mishen nogcha yolda. The question is also, did it give birth before the goring or after it? If it gave birth while it was still pregnant, then it means at the time the baby was still part of its body, And since we're talking about a tam, where we pay migufo, we're not talking about that we think that the baby itself individually caused the damage. What we're talking about, though, is if the damage was caused while the animal was pregnant, then the baby is still considered part of the animal, part of the mother, and therefore we would say that when it comes to paying for a tam, and a tam, as we've learned, you pay migufo, then the guf is going to include the baby as well. So therefore you're going to be able to figure out now the mother is worth 100, the baby is worth 20. Therefore, we have a maximum of 120 that we can work with as far as chatzi nezek. So on the other hand, it could be, you could have, it gave birth before it gored. So in that case, the baby is already separated from it. And in that case, you can't collect from the baby, only from the mother's value. Or whether the animal gored after, or whether it gave birth only after it gored, in which case the baby was part of it. So similarly, mishtalim chatzin nezek min hapara or revien nezek min havlad. Similarly, the nizek will be able to collect chatzin nezek from the cow, from the mother, and a quarter of the nezek from the vlad. Now we're going to see in the Gemara what that part means. I mean, obviously he's not collecting three quarters of nezek because we're talking, it's only a tam over here. He's collecting maximum chatzin. So we'll see in the Gemara, we'll have a discussion in the Gemara what that part means about a half versus a quarter. But anyway, the point is that, again, we have this, because of the suffix, what we're doing is we're saying the value that potentially the nizik is claiming that I should be able to collect from the baby as well. The mazik is counterclaiming. Therefore, we split the difference and we say that we can collect only half of a half from the vlad. So the Gemara starts off, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zud Divrei Sumchus. This Mishnah that we're saying that let's focus on the first case of the Mishnah. We were saying we're not sure if the fetus, if that dead baby animal was killed by the goring or whether it was something unrelated. This that we're saying that you can collect rather a quarter of a nezek for the baby, that would be, says Shmuel, that would be only according to Sumchus. Where Sumchus says that when you have a suffix on money and you're not sure who it belongs to, then you divide it. The Chacham say this is a great general rule when it comes to dinei mamonos hamotzi mechaber olam araya. So therefore, the Chachamim would say that over here, you nizik want to claim that the dead baby is as a result of the negicha. You're going to have to bring more solid proof for that. Just to claim it is not and say therefore the other guy should have to pay half of your claim is not enough. You're going to have to bring a raya. Your edim are going to have to see not only that the goring took place, but they're going to have to be able to testify that the goring took place before the baby was born or miscarried. Now, Tosfos over here and in various other places in Shas deals with, there's a lot of lumdos actually in this one daf of Gemara over here, this that we're saying over here about Sumchos and some other points that we're going to talk about on Omid Beis. There's an enormous amount of lumdos in a lot of the things in the Gemara over here. So one thing, first of all, Tosfos points out, even Sumchus, when he says Yachloiku, is only, for example, when the animal is not in the Rishus of one of them, because if it's in the Rishus of one of them, we have what's called Cheskas Morakama, you have the Chazaka of the original owner. And when one of them is Muchzak in the object, then you assume it belongs to him. What's going on over here? So one thing Tosfos points out is that so maybe in fact we could say we can be talking about over here where it wasn't in the Rishus of either one of them at the time. At least according to Rabbi Akiva, where we learned before that when the animal causes damage, we say that now both of them are considered, that now we say yuchlat asher, the shur itself now belongs to the nizik. So therefore we can say that now the question is, well, who does it actually belong to as a result of this nizik? And therefore Sumchus would say yachloiku. Wouldn't necessarily work according to Rabbi Shmuel. And so uh, Elsewhere, also Tosfos points out, based on other Gemaras at the beginning above Metziah, and in other places, there are other considerations as well. The Gemara tells us at the beginning above Metziah, for example, that even Sumchos would only hold his din only when there's Drora de Mamoina. Now, Drora de Mamoina, Rashi explains over there at the beginning above Metziah, that it means where there's going to be a loss one way or the other. Meaning, in other words, so if you have, like in our case over here, there's Drora de Mamoina in the sense that if we have Reuven and Shimon over here, the owner of the shur and the owner of the para, if we say that Reuven is going to be liable to pay for the baby as well, and it turns out that in fact the baby had not been damaged by his shur, then you're causing him an inappropriate loss. He shouldn't have by rights he shouldn't be losing that money because it wasn't his shur that did it. And on the other hand, if you don't make them pay, then you're causing a loss to Shimon, because Shimon, after all, in that case, Shimon would be entitled to that money. So that's how Rashi defines Drora de Mamoina. So in that case, then Sumchus would say that we have to divide it, as opposed to the Gemara discusses at the beginning of Bava Metzia. You have, for example, the case of Shnayim Ochsim Batalis, where we make them each take a Shavua. And only then we split it. So that's different because over there, there's no Drora de Mamoina. That's how Rashi defines Drora de Mamoina over there. Tosfos defines Drora de Mamoina differently. And they explain it means that there's an inherent suffix. It's not a suffix that's brought about by either of their tainus. It's just there's an inherent suffix over here. We find the results over here, that there's a para that was injured and a baby over there. And we're not sure, whoever it is that saw it, is not sure what happened over here, what the order of things was, in which case, in other words, we have an inherent suffix. It's not like, as opposed to, for example, when it comes to Shnayim Ochsim Batalis, the suffix comes about only because of their tainus, only because each one is saying Ani Mitzasiya or Kulashali. Anyway, so there is a good deal of discussion about what cases will Sumchus apply his din of Mamana Mutab Suffolk Choken, and the point is, even in those cases, we're saying the Chamsa Motz Mechavel Varaya. There will be a case where the Chachamim also agree that Choken, and that would be in cases where there really is no, neither one really is muhsak at all. You have, for example, an item that was hefker. You have cases in Baba Basra that involve, for example, Yoshim, different sets of Yoshim, where two people died at approximately the same time, and we don't know which came first, and each set of Yoshim is coming to claim. So there are cases where the Chachamim will agree that Yachloiko, because you can't speak about Moitzi Mechavela Varaya, because neither one is Moitzi. But whenever there is somebody that's Moitzi, whenever there is somebody who has a certain degree of Chazaka, then the Chachamim are going to say a general rule, HaMoitzi Mechavela Varaya. So therefore, according to them, the din of our Mishnah would not apply. We would say that the owner of the Shur is going to be chayev, of course, he's going to be chayev to pay for the value, for the chatzi nezek of the para itself, no question, but he's not going to pay anything for the vlad unless the owner of the para and the vlad can prove that, in fact, the shur had caused that injury or that death of it. So the Gemara says, lomali l'meimu zek l'agodol b'din. Why do the Chachamim have to introduce this by saying zek l'agodol b'din? Just say, v'chamem ha'motzi mechavel avaraya. What are they stressing with that expression? And the answer is itzrich. They need to say that point. What we're saying is, even if the nizik is saying, I'm certain, in the case of our Mishnah, let's say, for example, the nizik says, I'm absolutely certain that this baby was killed as a result of the goring, its mother was gored while it was pregnant, and then afterwards it miscarried. And then the mazik says shema. The mazik says, I'm not certain, maybe not, I wasn't there. Nevertheless, so you would think maybe body outweighs shema. We don't say that hamotzi mechavel avaraya. The Chacham is saying even in that case we say hamotzi mechavel avaraya. So that's why they introduce it by zeh klal gadol. This is a great general rule. In other words, that across the board, whenever we have there's a motzi, we're always going to say a motzi mechavel avaraya, even though we're talking about bori versus shem. What the case is of our Mishnah exactly? You do have different mafoshim discuss what exactly. So in our Mishnah, are we talking about is the Gemara in fact saying that in our Mishnah we're talking about bori v'shema, or are we saying in our Mishnah it may be bori or bori? Or in our case, it may be Shema v'Shema. You have different Rishonim talk about it in different other Gemaras. But the point is, that the point is that if the Chachamim are saying across the board, whatever the claims and counterclaims are on both sides, Hamotz Mechavela Baraya. Tosfos over here gets into quite a bit of discussion about certain ins and outs of that. One point is, don't you have a case over here, Mechuyav Shvua Ve'eni Yochel Lishova? What you have over here is a concept that the Mazik, after all, is Mechuyav to swear because he's Moedim Amitzas. He's agreeing that his shur injured or killed the mother. The question is only about the baby, so he's a Moedim Amitzas. That would make him have to swear. He can't swear because he doesn't know what the facts are as far as the baby. And the usual rule is Mechuyav Shvua, that any Yochel Lishova has to pay. Tosfos points out a number of aspects of it. First of all, Shmuel doesn't necessarily hold of that concept. Second of all, if we say over here, we've discussed earlier in the Masechta, whether Chatzin Nezek is a Knas or Mammon, if we take the view that it's Knas, then look, if he were to be Moida, he would be Potter. So therefore, you can't make that when he's Chayev Shavua, you should have to pay him more than that. And Tosfos goes on to discuss several other aspects of it, reasons why Mechuyev Shavua Ve'en Yochel Lishova wouldn't apply over here. And then again, there is a good deal of lumdus that comes from this Tosfos over here. Marshaw discusses over here that who exactly was present. If we're talking about Moide Beknas, then yeah, then there's no Chatzin Nezek to pay in the first place because the whole Chatzin Nezek is only a Knas. So maybe we have something called a non sadi. Maybe we have over here that we could say over here. We do know for a fact that the shur gored the para and the mazik and when the mazik agrees to that, we wouldn't call it. That's not called moide beknas. Moide beknas would only be when we don't have evidence one way or the other. Here we have very strong evidence that it did. Other Mephoshim point out another consideration as well, which is there is a roiv to consider that most animals give birth to healthy live babies, and therefore that factors in over here. So there's a lot of discussion about that. So the Gemara says that. So the Gemara continues, inami, or you could say another reason why the Chachamim are stressing zeh klal gadol is l'chiha. They might be saying Zeh Klal Gadol Badin in order to also hint at the following case, where you have a Motzi Mechaver LaBaraya, even though you have when you have a certain uncertainty. De Itmar, we have a discussion like this. A person sells a shur to somebody else, and it turns out that animal habitually gores. So therefore, now it's a dangerous animal, and as we learned at the end of the previous perek, he might not even be able to keep it around, or if he does, he's going to be chayev for its nezakin. So Rav Omar Hareza Mekach Tos. So Rav says this is considered a Mekach Tos because we say that the so now what do we have over here? The Reuven sold the animal to Shimon. Reuven is now muchzik in the money. Shimon now has the animal. He wants to void the sale and get his money back, but Reuven is muchzik in the money. Rav says that he's able to say, it's a mekach tos, and I want my money back, because he can say, I bought this animal in order to plow with or do other kinds of work with, and now I can't do it because it's a nagfan. Shmuel can say no. The seller Reuven can say, I sold it to you, figuring that you're gonna buy it in order to shecht it, and in that case, it doesn't matter whether it's a nagchon or not. So now we're saying. So in other words, Shmuel is saying that when we're saying zeh klal gadol badin, we're saying even though most people buy animals for plowing, so therefore we would have reason to follow Rav, nevertheless, Shmuel is saying that no, when we say zeh klal gadol badin, amotzi mechaver l'baraya, nevertheless, the Chachamim are stressing that even in this case, we go according to the muchzak, and we say the other one, Shimon, wants to get the money back from him, he's going to have to bring a raya that he had actually bought the animal for plowing, and therefore that it would be, and therefore that he could call it a mekach tos. So the Gemara says, am I? So why do we have a suffix in the first place? Why do we have a machlokas? The nechse igavra the zovin l'ridya, igavra the zovin l'nechsasa. is this the kind of person who buys animals in order to plow, or the kind who buys them for shechting? Meaning, in other words, let's see what the person's job is. Is he a farmer, or is he a shoychet? If he's a farmer, then preposterous, he bought it for farming. If he's a shoychet, then he bought it in order to shecht. And we should assume that the seller knows that one way or the other. Here Rashi doesn't make that point, but this Gemara is also in Bava Basra, and the Rashbam points out over there that we're talking about where the seller knows the buyer, and he knows what his business is. Other Rishonim point out that look, even if he does, even if he they don't necessarily know each other individually, but we're talking about in general people in the town know, so therefore people in the town know what his business is, so therefore that's considered like he made a public statement that he's buying it for one versus the other. So if we know that, then what's the suffix? You see whether he's the kind to buy animals for plowing or for shechting. And the answer is loit sricha, yes, but the chidush, the case where we need the machlokas or Rabbi Shmuel, the gavur dezavin laho laho. You have a person who buys for both purposes. He's a butcher as well as a farmer. So therefore, so any individual animal that he buys, he might be buying for one purpose or the other. Well, the Gemara asks still, the nechse idmei ridya l'ridya, the idmei nechsasa l'nechsasa. Well, why don't we look at the value that he paid for it? After all, people are going to pay more for an ox that they're going to be using for plowing, because that's a more long-term thing, then they are going to pay for an animal that they're only going to shecht, where they would pay less for it. So let's take a look how much he paid and figure based on that. Tosfos points out there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that said where the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda disagree on that point. You have a case over there where a person sells a tsemed, which means a yoke of animals. And the question is, are the animals themselves included? Rabbi Yehuda says, you look at how much he paid. The Chacham say that's not a proof. But over here, the Gemara discusses, because it's a matter of terminology. Many people use the word tsemed to mean only a yoke, and some people use it to mean also to use the cows. Plus, he's also mukhsa. Over here, it's different. Over here, you have most people buy for plowing, but on the other hand, against that, and therefore that should make it a mekach tos, but against that, we have the muchzak, we have the fact that Reuven is holding on to the money, and therefore he's the muchzak. So then, we would say hadramim madim. We would say that that we can look at the value that he paid and figure on that basis whether it's a mekach tos or not. And the answer is loit sricha, yes, but we need the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel, de oikir bistra v'koy b'dmei ridya. Suppose that the price of meat goes up, and now the price that's paid for a shur for shchita is exactly the same or almost the same as the value of what you're paying for an ox for plowing. So therefore, you're not able to do that. So therefore, you're not able to figure out what he. So now he may claim that he bought it for one purpose, but the point is the other one can say, "I'm the mochsa kamotz mechavel of araya." Shmuel is saying, "You want to get your money back? Then you have to prove." Then you have to prove that you actually bought it for Ridya, for plowing, and then yes, we can say it's a mekach tos. Okay, well then now the question is, Amri, so they ask the question, look, if we're talking about where the seller has no money available to pay back. So then lishkale the Torah bezuzi. Then fine. So what's the problem? Even according to Rav, we're saying it's a mekach tos, but practically speaking, if he doesn't have money to pay back, lishkale the Torah bezuzi, then fine. Let Shimon who bought the ox take it and keep it in place of the money. He's gonna say in effect, look, you sold me the shur for $100. Now it turns out it's a mekach tos. I want my $100 back. So Reuven says I don't have $100. So fine. So Shimon will say, okay, well then in that case I'm keeping the shur. And in that case I'm keeping the shur, and that'll make up for the $100 that you owe me. The Amri Inchi, after all, people have the expression, Mimore Rashvosach Ori Ifra. When you have somebody who owes you money, Rashvosach is an Aramaic word that means somebody who borrowed money from you. Pori Ifra, even collect from him if you need to, collect bran. In other words, if all he's offering you to pay back the debt is bran, take it, because take whatever asset he's offering you, and that way at least you're paid off. So the same way, in other words, so it would come out according to whether, so it comes out. So what are we saying? Shmuel is saying that he keep the animal because Reuven can say it's not necessarily a mekach tos because I'm claiming that I sold it to you for shchita. According to Rav, we would say he would be entitled to get his money back. What we're saying over here, that there's the case could be where Reuven can say, I have no money to pay you back. Well, either way, then Shimon is keeping the shur. So what's the practical difference between them? Tosfos brings a different girsa, which is that not idelekele shalumimine. Tosfos prefers that girsa, which is the same as we have it in the Gemara, but Tosfos brings another girsa, idelese lahani zuzi. If we're talking about that the original money that Shimon paid Reuven no longer is in Reuven's possession because he spent it. Meaning, in other words, the implication would be, according to that girsa, it would come out that even if Reuven does have the ability to pay, but he doesn't have those actual coins that Shimon had paid him, then he wouldn't be required to, and he would be able to tell Shimon, you know what, listen, you have an asset worth $100 over here, the shur, so just keep it and leave me alone. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that when it comes to a bal choiv, we don't say that. So in fact, Tosfos ends up saying, you really have three different dinim over here. When it comes to, there can be three different cases where you owe a person money. There can be because you lent him money, or Tosfos points out this case of Mekach Tos, where it's a Mekach Tos, according to Rav, would amount to the same as a Baal Chayv. You owe him money as a result of a previous transaction. Then you can have Nizokin, where there was injury or damage caused. And then you have a Sochir, somebody who you hired to do a job. So a Baal Chayv, you have to pay with money unless you just don't have. If you don't have, then as the Gemara is saying over here, mimori rashvasach pori ifra, be satisfied with the fact that the guy is giving you something and just accept it and go. So over here, that would be as far as a Baal Chayv. As far as Nizokin, we're saying, as we learned back in the first parak, to begin with, you're able to pay with Meta. You're going to be able to pay with Kesef or Metav. So we had a pointer of Huna. We said over there, you have to pay with either money or the best of your land. And a pointer of Huna, Breda Rishua. And our papa over there, we said, Kol Mila Metav, who any kind of Metalplan are considered Metav, and therefore you could pay with them. Meanwhile, by a socher, we would tell him, regardless, you're obligated to pay the guy in money. You're not able to go and say, look, I don't have any money. I'm going to pay you in something else, unless the other guy agrees. Obviously, if the other guy agrees, then you could pay him with whatever you want. You have that famous story in Shabbos, for example, about the rich landowner and the guy who worked for him for 3 years, where then when he wants to collect his back pay, the employer says, I have no money, and he asks for animals, and he asks for land, and so on and so forth. The whole story over there about Don Lakovskos. So sure, if the worker is willing to take something else, then by all means, let him. But otherwise, if he Davka wants money, then the employer would actually be required to go and sell whatever it takes in order to raise actual cash to give him. So those are the three distinctions that Tosfos points out. Anyway, the point is, getting back to the Gemara, So again, if we're talking about, now here we're talking about a Baal Chayv. So again, a Baal Chayv is kind of a middle ground between those. We don't require him to pay in cash. We will allow him to pay in metalin, but as Tosfos says, only if he doesn't have cash. We don't say, he can't say, well, I don't have the original cash anymore, and therefore I shouldn't have to pay with metalin. No, if he has cash, and therefore I should be able to pay with metalin. No, if he has cash, even if it's not the original cash, he has to pay with that. But anyway, so if we're talking about where he has no money, then the guy is collecting from the shur, and that's that. And the answer is loit tzricha, yes, but we need the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel de ikalish dolomimine. He is able to collect money from the seller, from Reuven. So now Rav Omar reza mekach tos zilbasa ruba, because Rav said you have to go according to the Reuven. Ruba de inchi liridio hu dezavni. Most people buy animals in order to plow. Shmuel says that he can counter argue and say, Reuven can counter argue and say, as far as I'm concerned, I sold it to you for shchita. V'loyas linen basa ruba. We don't go according to the roiv, because Shmuel would say, kias linen basa ruba beisura. You know, when you go according to roiv is only in matters of isur v'heter. But when it comes to dinim amanus, loyas linen basa ruba, we do not go according to roiv. Ela amotzi mechavel avaraya. So Shmuel would say, that is why, when we learned on Amud Aleph, that the Chachamim introduced their statement, against Tzumchus, and they said, Zeh klal godol badin. So first we said, because they were saying even about Bori Veshema, now Shmuel is saying another dimension of what that means. Zeh klal godol means even in a case like this, where Roiv is on the side of the one claiming it's a Mechachtos, nevertheless, that doesn't help us because by Dinim Mominus, you don't go according to Roiv. And this is in general. We learned this concept earlier in the Masechta, that you don't go in, that you don't go according to Roiv and Dinim Mominus. This is where we get it from. So we always say Amotim Chavela Raya, even where Roiv supports the one who's who's making the claim. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi. In fact, we learn a Braisa that agrees with Shmuel's understanding of the Mishnah. Shur Shinoga Chasapora, we have the case of our Mishnah where Shur Gura Pora, Venimsa Ubra Betsida, you find the dead baby of the Pora next to it, the Eni Yadea Imanchala Nogha Yolda, Imisha Nogha Yolda, he doesn't know, or really that it should be the Eni Yadua, we don't know, as we had the expression in the Mishnah, whether the birth, whether the miscarriage took place before the goring or after it, Mashalam Chatzinez Kapora of Vienes Kavlad, Divrei Sumchos. So here the Braisa adds, this is according to Sumchus. So that exactly agrees with when, at the beginning of the Sugya, when Shmuel said that our Mishnah is only according to Sumchus, now we see that Braisa says exactly that. That the case, that the fact that he's paying Chatzi Nezik of the Pora and Revia Nezik for the Vlad, would only be according to Sumchus. So therefore the Braisa is telling us exactly what Shmuel said. Okay. Now, we mentioned this point about Motzi Mechavel of Araya. So let's talk about that. Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, minayim ha-motzi mechavel of araya. Where do we get this din from? Where do we get this concept of ha-motzi mechavel of araya? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, you have, when Moshe is getting ready to go, this is after Matan Torah, Moshe is getting ready to go up to Har Sinai, where he's going to spend 40 days learning the Torah from Hashem and getting the Luchas. So he, before he leaves, he says, I'm leaving, he tells the Skenim, I'm leaving Aaron and Hur in charge. Me bal dvarim yigash aleihem. Anybody who has words, anybody who has a din Torah should come to them, meaning in other words, because usually they're going to be coming to me all this time. Now they're going to come to Aaron and Hur while I'm away. But the expression me bal dvarim yigash aleihem, we understand that it means yigash doesn't just mean he should approach. It means yagish raya aleihem, means he has to bring forth a raya to them. So he has to, if he wants to make a claim, he has to bring his, it's not enough for him to make his claim, he has to bring a raya. We learn from that pasuk. So the maskif of Ashi, instead of Ashi, says, why do you even need a pasuk for that? Ha lomali kra. What do you need a pasuk for that? Svarahu. Isn't it a plain svara that if you're making a claim, you need to bring a proof? I mean, otherwise, for one thing, I mean, and then everybody will just make claims against somebody else and the other guy is going to have to defend themselves. But anyway, Rav Ashi says, like the expression, dekoyev like ke'iva, when you have a person who's hurting, he's the one who goes to the doctor. So the same way, yes, if a person is going to make a claim, of course he has to back it up with some kind of raya. He can't just make a claim, stamazoi. So why do we need a pasuk to tell us that? Ella kra l'chidur of Nachman Omer Rav Baravua. Rather, says Rav Ashi, the pasuk is actually telling us rather a different din, namely what Rav Nachman said in the name of Rav Baravua. Now, the Maharam, by the way, points out, what's the Gemara's question that it's so poshut? What do you mean, l'omali kra svarahu? We just said that Sumchus disagrees and says that in many cases, yachloiku. Also, we just said before that Shmuel is saying that the whole concept of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya applies even when there's a roiv against him, and we said Rav disagrees with that. So yes, maybe the pasuk has to tell us that that nevertheless in those cases we say Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. How can we say Lomali Kross Svarahu? So the Maharam says, because you can say B'doichot, look, after all, the Pasuk is not clearly talking about Momen Amoto B'Safet, but the Pasuk is talking about the Balei Dinim, Mi Baal Dvarim, a person who has a case, who has a claim in Beis Din, Yagish Raya Aleim. So Rav Ashi is asking that at least as far as the point that he has to bring a proof, then that's at least as far as the fact that as far as what we do with the mammon, maybe fine. It's not such a simple svara to say that if he doesn't bring a proof, then he doesn't get the money. There we have to go. We have Sumchos that says differently. But rather the question is, at least as far as the Teveya, at least as far as that he should be obligated to bring some kind of proof before we even consider his claim, that would be a pashut thing, and therefore what's the chiddush in it? So that's sort of Ashi's question is why we need a pasuk to tell us that point. So elakra l'chidur Rav Nachman amar Rav Bar Avuha. Rather, the pasuk comes to teach us what Rav Nachman says in the name of Rabbi Bar Avuha. The Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabbi Bar Avuha, minayin shein niskokin elo l'teveya tchila. How do we know that we listen first, that we deal first with the claim of the teveya? When you have a teveya and a nitva, you have a plaintiff who makes a claim in Beis Din, and you have a defendant who is defending himself against that. Now, you could have a case where he has a counterclaim that would undo the other one's claim. So Rashi gives an example. Reuven takes Shimon to Beis Din and says, "You owe me a money. You owe me 100 zuz, which I previously lent you." In a parenthetical note, in Rashi you have that it was be'edim or b'shtar. The point being, in other words, that therefore, so in other words, if there was no edim and there was no shtar, then there's no question because then Shimon can deny that it ever happened. We could say I paid back or whatever. But here, where there are edim or there's a shtar, then Shimon doesn't have that ability. So now Shimon replies and he says, yes, it's true that you lent me that money and I haven't paid back. However, for example, Shimon is counterclaiming. On the other hand, you're holding on to something that belongs to me. So give that back. And then, if you don't, then that'll pay off for the loan. Or for example, he claims I gave you a mashkin and you used it, and therefore we have to deduct that from the amount that I owe you. So different kinds of cases like that. So now what happens is when we say niskokin la teveya tchila means we first deal with Reuven's claim. We say, as far as Reuven's claim is concerned, look, Shimon, you're agreeing that you didn't pay back the money. Go pay it back. Afterwards, we'll deal with your claim that he was toifus from you, or that he took a mashkin from you, or what have you. So that's one meaning of niskok in the teveya tchila. So where do we know that? We'll talk about it in a second. Other meanings of it, but anyway. So Rav Nachman is saying that. How do we know that? Shenema mi baal dvarim yigash aleihem yagish dvarav aleihem. The baal dvarim, the one who's first making the claim in Beis Din, is the one. He should be the one first to bring his case, to bring his words to Beis Din, meaning, in other words, that Beis Din will deal with his case and judge accordingly and give a verdict accordingly. After that, if there's another case, then they'll deal with that separately. So Rav Nachman is saying we learn that we don't learn the concept of hamotzi mechaver l'varaya from that pasuk, because as Rav Ashi said, it's a plain svara. Rather, we're learning it from it, this concept of niskokin l'teveya tchila. There's a lot of different other explanations what niskokin elo teveya tchila means. Tosfos over here explains you can have another example where now like this. Usually, when a person says, "I need time to bring my edim or to bring my proofs," usually Beis Din will give him a grace period of 30 days to do that. If it's going to be any more than that, then Beis Din says, "Look, you know, we can't keep this case open for that long, so we're going to judge it now based on the evidence that we have, and afterwards, if you have your afterwards when you bring your edim or your proof or whatever, then we'll rejudge the case." So now the case is Tosfos is saying, first of all, you could have that Shimon says, for example, he mentions the actual names of two edim who were actually there at the time and they know what happened, but they're further away, and that I can't bring them to Beis Din within 30 days. Without the pasuk, we would think, well, Beis Din should say, okay, we'll put the case on hold until those edim can show up. Now we're saying that no, we have to judge the case based on what we have in front of us now, or at least what can be brought within the usual deadline of Beis Din, which is 30 days. If we don't have that, then no, niskokin la teveya tchila, we're going to deal with the teveya's case And after that, at some later point, Shimon, if you have other proofs counterclaim that, then you'll go ahead and bring them then. Tosfos mentions another possibility is we can be talking about where the argument between them is that Reuven says that Shimon had injured him. Now with that, we're not kevei azman. The Gemara says later in the Masechta, we don't have that 30-day grace period for that. So those are a couple of explanations. There's a lot of different other explanations of what Niskok and Latevea Tchila means. It can mean Poshet, the guy says, I want to be heard first. I want to bring my Edim first. There can be a case, the Shach points out, you can have an example where if Reuven, let's say, for example, Reuven is saying, you owe me $100. Shimon is going to counterclaim and say, I owe only 50. Now, if Shimon were to be allowed to present his statement first, that I only owe 50, then he wouldn't be a moed mitzvah, because at the time when he said, I owe 50, then there wasn't any claim against him yet. Therefore, Niskok and Latevea Tchila, we say that we listen to Reuven first, and that the result is that Shimon is a moed mitzvah, and therefore Shimon is going to have to take the usual shavua for that. So the Gemara continues, Amri Nahadoi, the Chachamim of Nahadoi said, Pa'amim Shiniskok and Lanitba Tchila. There are actually times when we do listen to the nitba first. There are times when we say, different than the usual rule, we do say that the nitba gets to make his claim first. Because zili nichse. The case would be where his property is going to go down in value. So Rashi says, for example, continuing with his example of, let's say, for example, so again, Reuven is saying, you owe me $100. Shimon is saying, yes, but you have a mashkin of mine that you haven't returned and that you used and is worth less. Suppose now, for example, that you have right now is the season or there are merchants available who will be willing to buy that mashkin. And if you wait, then they're going to lose, then they're going to leave and he's not going to be able to sell it. So then we would say, then we will listen to Shimon's claim at the time. We're not just going to say that in the normal case, in other words, again, in Rashi's scenario, we would say, look, Shimon, you agree that you didn't pay back Reuven his $100, pay it back to him. You say as a mashkin of yours, we'll deal with that separately. But now Shimon can say, on the other hand, you know, right now I have a golden opportunity to sell this mashkin and get a nice amount of money for it because there are merchants in town who are willing to buy it. If you make me wait until later, I'm going to lose that opportunity. So basically we'll say that's a valid point. We'll deal with your claim now. Another example, Rashi says, let's say that, so now what are we saying? He owes the $100. Now he's in financial straits. He was seeing he's having to sell his property in order to raise the money in order to raise that $100. So now we're going to say that the result is people are gonna figure they can buy everything at fire sale prices because he's desperate to sell. So then in that case, Beistin will say, in that case, we don't want to do that. So in that case, we'll listen to both of your claims simultaneously. In other words, we'll allow you to present your counterclaim as well, so that you don't necessarily go out to sell, so you don't necessarily have to go and sell your property in such desperation. So then in that case, that would be an example of where we listen to the nitba first. In Tosfos's various scenarios, you could also have things like that where there would be a loss to Shimon. For example, his Edom are going to go out of town. He won't have them available to testify on his behalf. Or again, for example, where if he's having to sell things quickly in order to raise the money, then he's going to end up losing. In the Shach's example, you have similarly, you could have because now it's known that there's a claim against him, then therefore that impacts his credit rating and people are less willing to do business with him or to lend him in the future, or he's having to sell his property at cheaper prices or whatever. So in all those cases, the Nahadoi are pointing out that we have examples over there where we do have to listen to the Nitba at the same time or even before the Tevea, because we don't want to cause an unnecessary loss to him. There's an interesting Sicha in Chelek Tes Zayin, actually, where the Rebbe derives from this a lesson in Avodas Hashem. Who are the Tevea and the Nitba within a person? The Tevea is the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is always trying to be Tevea, is always trying to claim against you that he should have, that he should get you to do what he wants. Sometimes it happens, a person ends up being Moedu B'Mikzas. So to take the Shach's example, sometimes you have, yes, you know, he has to admit he did end up falling somewhat into the clutches of the Yetzirah. So usually what we say is, niskok in the tevea tchila, what does that mean? In the shach's example, the result of that is that we're going to make him take a shvua, because he's a moedim mitzas. A shvua in a deeper level is the point. What is a shvua? He's swearing in Hashem's name. The deeper meaning of a shvua is that we're strengthening him in elikos, like you have at the beginning of Tanya, mashbiyim moiseh tzadik, where it means also masbiyin, that Hashem fills him up and satisfies him with ruchnius in order to be able to accomplish his mission in the world. So in this case, because he's a mode of mixas to the Yetzirah, therefore we arrange the case in such a way where he will have to swear, meaning that he's being given extra koichas milamayla. On the other hand, continuing the Nahau Doi, you can have a case where zili nichse, where his nechosim are going to go down in value, meaning we're talking about a person who realizes that every moment of his life is precious and is necessary for avoda, and he has no time even to deal with the Yetzirah and to try to deal with its claims and counterclaims or whatever. He just wants out. He doesn't want to have to deal with the Yetzirah at all, because he realizes that he needs to be spending his time on positive avoda. So then in that case, niskok and the nitba tchila, then we say to the, then such a person is able to say to the Yetzirah, you have no claim against me at all. I don't even need the shavua. Hashem, to begin with, will help such a person that all his days will be complete days without lacking any of the avoda he needs to accomplish during that time, rather than having to waste time fighting against the Yetzirah. This is a sikha in Chelik Tzayin, partly based on a minor as well. Anyway, the point is, an interesting side point, by the way, in our Gemara over here, we were saying that this pasuk mi bal dvorim yigash aleihem. First, we wanted to say that we're learning from Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya, and Rav Ashi had objected that that's a svara, we don't need a pasuk for it, and instead he said minayin shein niskok and ella tevei tchila. A very interesting vort on it from the Chassam Sofer. He says, b'chlal, why is this concept being introduced only now when Moshe is going up to Har Sinai? And he says, because Moshe, being the greatest Navi ever, he was actually able to judge cases based on Ruach HaKodesh. Meaning, in other words, that not just that when he's not sure what the halacha is, he can ask Hashem, which we find that as well, but when there's a question on the facts, for example, here we're talking about Motzi Mechavel HaRaya, means we have an uncertainty in the facts, and we need to know what the facts were. Moshe was able to judge those facts with Ruach HaKodesh, with his Nevuah. And you find a similar thing in a somewhat similar vein. It's brought to the Chidah brings, for example, that when we talk about sometimes we say that Eliyahu Hanavi can tell us the halacha and such a thing. What do you mean? Torah l'bishabayim he, because we're not telling him to tell us the halacha. We're telling him to tell us the facts of the case, and that we can have Eliyahu Hanavi tell us. So that we can have a dayan in principle. You even have a din in the Rambam that says that a dayan can judge when it comes to the facts, can judge based on his own on his own intuition, on his own gut feeling or whatever. Anyway, the point is that here, Moshe Rabbeinu in particular had the ability to judge based on Ruach HaKodesh, based on Nevuah. So therefore, when people came to him with cases like this of Suffolk, there was no Suffolk. Moshe would be able to tell them what the facts are, and there was no need for Hamotzi Mechavel Avodai. Now Moshe is going up to Har Sinai, so he tells them, it's true that Aaron and Hur are Nevi'im, but they're not Nevi'im of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu. They're not going to be able to do this. We find that Shlomo HaMelech wanted to be able to do this kind of thing, and Abascal told him, you can't. So in the same vein, Moshe is saying, Aaron and Hur can't do that. Therefore, now we have to introduce the concept of Hamotzi Mechavel HaBaraya and the concept of Niskok and the Tevea Tchila, which was not necessary as long as I was judging. And he adds also that this is why we find when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai, and you have it in Parshas Yisro over there, by Himi Machara, Rashi explains it was the day after Yom Kippur, and there's a huge line of people waiting to see Moshe Rabbeinu, and Yisro tells him, how can you do this? You need to appoint judges. Why now, all of a sudden, this become an issue? So the Chassam Sofer goes on to say, he says, because up in everybody who had a case like that, they didn't want to bring it to Aaron and Hur, because they said, in the case, if I bring it to Aaron or Hur, I'm going to have to bring a Raya, I'm going to be the Tevea, I have to be a Moshe. I don't want to do that. Let me wait until Moshe comes back, and therefore I don't need that, because now Moshe will know with his Nevuah that the truth is according to what I'm saying, and therefore, so now there was a huge backlog of cases waiting for Moshe to take care of when he came down from Har Sinai. Okay. Yeshikayach, everyone.
Yeshikayach.